Gosh, I'll tell you, you are hard-pressed to scroll through social media pages, whether it's Instagram, Facebook these days, and not see recent pictures posted of the Northern Lights. Those Northern Lights that we saw over the last week and a half or so were as spectacular as I have ever seen in my life. And and the ones that I saw from just outside my house, nowhere near as good as some of the ones in different parts of Saskatchewan. I saw some pictures from the Pilot Butte area in Saskatchewan. I saw a couple from south of Humboldt that were absolutely, like, these are award-winning pictures that people just took on their phone capturing the Northern Lights. The Prairie Skies have been putting on a spectacular show lately. Those Northern Lights, and I mean, it hasn't just been over Saskatchewan. This has been over a big chunk of Canada and the United States as well. I always enjoy conversations with Samantha Lawler, and this, along with a couple of other things going on in the sky, caused us to reach out, and I'm happy to say we have the Associate Professor of Astronomy at the University of Regina, Samantha Lawler, joining us by phone this morning. Samantha, thanks for taking the call.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, these Northern Lights, how about that show, hey?
Oh, that was so good. It was so good. Yeah, that was incredible. I mean, I've seen a lot of aurora shows where you can kind of see a little bit of red, and if you take a picture with your phone, you can definitely see the red. But this was like bright red with your eyes, and even going into like purples, and that was so cool.
So tell us why you the thing you just mentioned is interesting, because a lot of people are saying on their post, they say this picture is different than the way it looked to me and kind of just the naked human eye. Why is that?
Yeah, our eyes are not very good at seeing colors in low light. So, you know, when you're looking up at auroras, a lot of times it's not that bright. And especially in the red part of the spectrum, our eyes are just not very good at picking that up. So, but a cell phone camera or a professional camera, they're very good at that. And you can do a longer time exposure, right? So you can collect light over a longer period of time. And that makes those colors really show up. So I felt like, I was out taking pictures and enjoying it both with my eyes and with my phone and with a camera. It was impressive how much the pictures actually lined up with what I was seeing with my eyes. That's right. Usually not the case.
So pretend I'm sitting in one of your classes at the U of R, and I put my hand up and I say, you know, why are they calling these solar storms? Give us a bit of a rundown on what creates these spectacles in the sky, and why do they refer to them as storms?
Yeah. Okay. So the sun has a magnetic field, and it has that magnetic field gets twisted up by the way the sun rotates around, right? So the Earth rotates as a solid body because it is, but the sun is not a solid body, right? It's made out of plasma. So it rotates differently at different latitudes, right? The equator rotates faster than the poles. And so you get these magnetic fields twisted up, and that shows up as sunspots, which with a proper solar filter, you can actually see those sunspots, and there's lots of websites where you can look up and see what does the sun look like today. And the sun has these activity cycles where there's more sunspots and then fewer sunspots. So the sun right now is at a high point in its activity cycle. It repeats every 11 years or so. So the sun will continue to have lots and lots of sunspots over the next couple of years, and then it'll drop off, and then in about 10 years it'll ramp back up again. So right now there's lots of sunspots, and these sunspots the tangled up magnetic fields kind of hold in plasma, and if these magnetic fields break, that can release a whole bunch of plasma, very dense, much denser than usual. And if it's headed toward the Earth, then that plasma interacts with Earth's magnetic field and Earth's upper atmosphere, and we get auroras.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about
long explanation,
I enjoyed it though. I appreciate it. When you talk about the cycle, so we're not talking about this is something that happens every year at this time of year. There's more to it than that. You're talking 11 year cycle.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of, there's a little bit of Earth's orientation to the sun that makes auroras more likely to happen. So when we're closer to the equinoxes is when auroras are a little bit more likely, but it's really dominated by how active the sun is.
Mm-hmm. Is there different brightness or different colors depending on where you're standing? Like I was seeing pictures from central United States. Did they see a different version of the Northern Lights than we would have seen here?
So the colors are telling you a little bit about altitude, like how high up above the Earth's surface are the interactions between the sun's plasma and Earth's atmosphere happening. So the greens are happening at like 80 to 100 kilometers above Earth's surface, and the reds are happening at like 200 to 400 kilometers. So they're much, much higher altitude, which means you can see them from farther away. So a lot of times when you see pictures of auroras from really far south, like I actually saw a picture in this last storm from El Salvador, which is wild. A lot of times you only see the red because that's the highest altitude part. So that's the part you'll be able to see from the farthest south.
Interesting. There's a question that came in on the text line wanting to know if there's a way to track these. Like we track, you know, a full moon and those types of things. Can you track when the Northern Lights are going to be vibrant?
Yeah, somewhat. So there's a couple of satellites that are watching the sun for these solar storms to happen. But exactly how the storm is going to interact with Earth's magnetic field and Earth's upper atmosphere and exactly where that chunk of plasma is going to go is pretty uncertain because we just don't have that much data. So you can, there's a couple of good websites that I look at. Spaceweather.com is a really good one. There's also the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I think that's what it stands for, NOAA. If you look at NOAA auroras, that's a really good website run by the U.S. government.
I'm curious. I was just going to say there was a couple of news articles right at the peak of these Northern Lights saying that they could cause disruptions of radio signals, of transmissions. Whether it's just how they interfere with the airwaves. Did we see that happening?
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, right? Because, radio waves are affected by magnetic fields and charged particles, which is exactly what the auroras are. So I didn't hear about a lot of it happening here in Saskatchewan, but I think that's just because of the time of year. So what was it, a year and a half ago in May, we had May 2024, there was that huge aurora storm. And I know a lot of farmers had problems with their tractors that were relying on GPS signals because the GPS signals were not getting through the aurora. But right now, nobody's out harvesting or driving their tractors around right. very much. So I think just because of the time of year, we didn't hear as much about it. There could have been even disruptions to electrical grids, but it wasn't that strong. But that is something that can happen and has happened in the past.
I was wondering aloud if this is what caused the TSN blackouts the other night during the Grey Cup. But
someone else asked me that too. Yeah.
We won't go there.
I don't think the timing was quite right. But yeah,
for sure. Samantha Lawler is my guest, associate professor of astronomy at the University of Regina. Frank, my tech producer here at the studio, just pointed out to me the James Webb Space Telescope. There was just an article saying they may have finally found the first stars in the universe. Do you know what this is about?
James Webb Space Telescope is right. It's high resolution and it's looking at infrared wavelengths, so it's able to look really, really far away, which means you're looking back in time, which is kind of confusing, right? So, you know, everything in space is so far away that it actually takes a really long time for the light to get to us, right? Like when you look at the sun, it's actually you're seeing it as it was 8 minutes ago. When you look at the next star, the next closest star to us, you're seeing it as it was 4 years ago. So if you can look far enough away, you can see back to the beginning of the universe. You can see the first stars. So,
wow.
So that's what the James Webb Space Telescope is doing. And astronomers don't really know much about how the first stars would have worked because the composition of the universe would be so different from today. So mm-hmm. how does that, what would a star burn? How would it work? Right. So those are the kinds of questions that they're trying to answer with this incredibly powerful telescope.
In just the last couple minutes we have, there's been a lot of news lately about comets, and I've seen a couple of articles. There was one just, I think, a week ago, Remembrance Day, I think, November 11th, there was supposed to be one passing, although they said passing by Earth, it was still, what, 270 million miles away or something.
Not very close, yeah. Luckily. So there was Comet Lemon about, 3 weeks ago was visible. Like, you could see it from here very easily in the evening sky. There's also this interstellar comet, 3I Atlas, which has been getting a lot of news because there's a notorious astronomer who keeps claiming that it's actually an alien spaceship. But there's no indication it's an alien spaceship. It's a comet. It's a comet from another solar system, which is super interesting, right? Most of the comets that we see going by the sun formed in our own solar system, but this one, because of how fast it's moving, we know it had to come from a different solar system, and that in itself is really exciting. This is the third comet that astronomers have found from another solar system, and we're going to find a lot more. So just that in itself is incredibly interesting, and astronomers are watching how it reacts to being warmed up by the sun for the first time in millions or maybe even billions of years. What are the chemical composition like? Is it the same as comets in our solar system? Right. There's a lot of really interesting questions that astronomers can answer by looking at it. And that's what astronomers are trying to do.
Samantha Lawler is my guest. Last question. Do we have a meteor shower that's going to be happening in the near future? I thought I read something about that.
Yeah. So the Leonid meteor shower just peaked a couple nights ago. It's been really foggy where I am, at least. So I haven't seen stars for a few days. But it should. It's the peak has passed. It should continue to be more meteors, more shooting stars in the sky over the next week or so. So if you're outside, especially after midnight, looking up, watch for shooting stars.
Love it, Samantha Lawler. Always appreciate you giving us some time. Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Clear skies.
Samantha Lawler, Associate Professor of Astronomy at the University of Regina. Gosh, there's been a lot going on in the astronomy world over the last little while. And as Samantha just said, still lots to keep an eye out for if you're looking up once it's dark. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.